Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Left wall for Pouliot, hesitates, slips his way down low to the corner, back up high for Geeky, walks to the middle, fakes, nearly stumbles, gets it toward the net, save, rebound, it gets behind Levi, a scramble and a crease, and the whistle blows.
Devin Levi and the Amherst on to the next round. They're in Rochester, a sweep with a crunch. Levi, back-to-back shutouts. Good morning, Jeremy and Joe. Happy Friday. Some weather coming in this weekend. The Derby, we're going to do our 9:30 Derby segment with Nick the Railbird from Batavia Downs to tell you all about what's going on at Batavia Downs. We'll get an official morning show bet. We are going to ask him to try to include the horse named Owen Almighty. As long as he doesn't get scratched, then, you know,
there was somebody else. Rodriguez, I saw, has already been scratched.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know who replaced Rodriguez, but.
Good question. If there's somebody.
Like, a new name in the field,
if there's somebody ready to go, ready to launch.
Yep.
Jeremy and Joe, good morning. Give us a call if you want, 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550 here on this Friday. We opened up talking about the Amherst and Devin Levi and, you know, the Sabres. Plans for the net going forward, whether or not, you know, Levi and Lukanen, and also continuing to wait for the Sabres to make any sort of announcement, if there even will be one, about the future of their front office. I don't know anybody that expects a big change. Elliot Friedman, his report was there will be changes, but he doesn't know how big or small. That could be like an assistant coach or something like that. So it's another Friday and just kind of, you know, waiting for anything with that regard. So
yeah,
if anything comes along, of course, you'll hear it here on WGR. We'll go to the phones, though. Mark in Chicago is first up here in this this next segment. Hey, Mark, good morning.
Good morning. Hi, guys.
Morning.
A long-time listener. Haven't had a chance to call because just very busy, but I wanted to just talk a little bit. First off, it's nice to see the Amherst succeeding, but it seems like we often seem to focus on the Amherst success more than we do on the Sabres success. So I know it's difficult as a hockey fan. Back on the Bills front, one thing I wanted to kind of bring up, and I heard Sal on your show talk about it a few days ago about, you know, the infamous call and so forth, and that maybe Bean was just protecting his guys. And I have kind of a theory on that that I didn't hear anybody bring up this week. I work in like a Fortune 50 company, and anytime you have some huge projects or a long-term thing that you're doing, you tend to have some sort of, like, I'll call it a celebration or a recap afterwards. So my kind of theory in the way I think Bean was very aggressive with you guys was I think he may have said, okay, we've been working all weekend, all year toward a goal. We got there. Take Sunday off. Enjoy your family. And then Monday, let's do a recap. Come in the office. Talk about what we learned, what we could have done better, et cetera. So my guess is he probably had a bunch of scouts sitting in an office at One Bills Drive, even listening to the show. And they may have come to him and said, hey, you know, we don't feel like people are giving us the due we get, we should get. And I think it's a defensive mechanism, obviously, but it makes me really wonder how much of this is more just him just kind of feeling like they put this whole year worth of work in, and the first thing they're hearing, not necessarily that that's what you said, was kind of negative, I'll say. And I listened to your show. You know, I heard a few callers calling about the wide receiver piece, but I highly doubt that that's what Brandon actually heard before he was on the call. I think he heard something from his scouts, and then he just kind of use that as motivation to talk the way he did to you guys.
Sure. Thanks, Mark. Maybe.
The more interesting thing is that it, because that wouldn't be new to him. That wouldn't be new to any general manager in the National Football League that you would, especially for what the it wasn't even criticism. It was more of a question about how he operates at a position. How many GMs in the league would wake up the next morning if they turned on the radio and heard some form of criticism of their draft?
Well,
it happens every single year to a lot of general managers. That's not the interesting part. Isn't that he would have disagreed with it? It's the energy and the anger that he kind of took to it, because that's the unique thing that you don't almost ever see from any general manager in the NFL. That's what's interesting about it.
Yeah, that really is what made it happen. Was the presentation. If he had just said, whatever, it does not go where it went, really, at all. It doesn't go viral. You know, people don't treat it like how it was treated. Mark, I think what's Sal's theory about protecting his guys is an interesting point, and I think it makes sense. The only problem with it is that the draft is where you take players to replace guys on your team. And the Bills took a defensive tackle, two defensive tackles. They took a corner, and they took a defensive end. Like, yeah. A.J. Epinesa might be out because Landon Jackson is in.
They took a guy that has the Cam Lewis skill set.
Right.
So it's like, he's Cam Lewis 2.0.
It's to some degree, it's one of the questions I asked of Joe Marino when he was on with us. Like, which Bill had the worst? It was on the show, the show that Joe and I do on Mondays and Thursdays. Like, which Bill had the worst weekend? And he said A.J. Epinesa, probably, because Landon Jackson might be coming for that guy's job. And, you know, Michael Hoyt and...
Did he say Dane Jackson, too, had a bad day? Because the numbers at corner now are suddenly like...
Right.
There's a ton of guys.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, we could try to get inside of Brandon Bean's head, and, you know, we've probably done that to a great degree and probably too far. I just end up thinking, throughout this, pretend there wasn't an argument. I don't know. We've talked so much about it. I appreciate you bringing it up, Mark, so I'm not upset. Someone will be mad that we're talking about it, but that's okay. It's very, 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 very simple to me. They wanted a receiver, and they didn't get it done, and down there's disagreement about whether or not that's okay. Mm-hmm. That's what happened. They were going to get one. They were trying to get one. They planned to get one. They would have done 20 mock drafts. They probably got one in 17 of them, and they wanted one, and they didn't get one. And because they didn't get one, they signed Elijah Moore, who looks like a nice player. It's a nice safety net. It's a nice backup plan.
And you also would probably count on being able to make an impact for you without seeing the guy in training camp. You would count on Elijah Moore making an impact more than you would a fourth-round rookie.
Yeah, and maybe Bean felt that, I was listening to Joe Marino again, who talked about the way the board fell. Once you got to the fourth round, it was either going to be the Deion Walker pick or it wasn't going to happen. Right. And that has happened to the Bills a couple times. This is, if you're always picking 30th, and this is another thing. Bean talked about this before the draft, about how you're picking as late as we are. You know, it is a thing you earn. It's a good sign you're picking that late. But, man, it's got to be frustrating. Imagine, you know how it is. You really want someone. Think about your own fantasy draft. I know it's not fantasy football. But you draft 12th in a 12-person league. You might really want somebody. Like, guess what? You're not going to get them. Sorry. You can't have him.
Right, because the guy at 7 picks him 3 spots higher than he normally goes.
Yes, and you've done all your mocks, and you think, my God, this guy's going to slide to me, and he doesn't.
Yeah.
And that happens 7 years in a row.
Yeah.
You can go back to the Bills drafting James Cook when they traded down twice. Why do you trade down? Because the board doesn't fall for you, so you try to pull some more out of the board by moving down. What happened in the Worthy draft? Worthy and Coleman, why did they trade down a couple spots? Well, because the board probably didn't fall. Maybe they thought that these three players would be there, and all three got scooped. And if that happens 10 times in a row, you're probably annoyed by it, but you do the best that you can do and come out with good players and feel good about it. And then when somebody says, how come you didn't do the thing we all thought you were going to do? The answer you don't want to give, because you're not allowed to give this as an NFL GM, is say, we got scooped 10 times. Instead, you just say,
right,
it didn't work out. We got what we liked. And, you know, that all does make sense. I kind of, you know, joked a little bit in the first segment. There's an article at NFL.com, landing spots for Amari Cooper. And I clicked on it because I thought, come on, no way, right?
That they'd be listed?
No way. No way will the Bills be listed.
Because I wouldn't list them if I were doing that article.
7 landing spots for Amari Cooper. I just wanted to see. I'm a glutton for, it's Kevin Patra, senior news writer, NFL.com. Amari Cooper landing spots. Number 1, Dallas. Okay?
Yep.
Number two, Arizona. Three, New Orleans. Four, Philly. Five, Vegas. Six, Jets. Seven, Bills. And what does he write about the Bills?
Mm-hmm.
The Bills have shown little interest in bringing Cooper back after last year's disappointment. But hey, they could still use some wideout help, even if saying that aloud brings the ire of Brandon Bean. And then he writes, the Elijah Moore signing doesn't change that. Cooper already knows the offense could continue to build chemistry with Josh Allen after sporadic play. If Bean was willing to trade draft assets for Cooper during the season, mm-hmm. couldn't he consider bringing him back on the cheap? And I've always thought that that was a possibility, they'd bring him back on the cheap, but right now it looks like it's not that cheap.
All right.
803-0550. Thanks, Mark. Thanks for the phone call. Brian in Canada before the break. Hey, Brian.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Just one thing I haven't heard a lot of people talk about with the whole offseason approach, focusing on defense, defensive heavy draft. Is there a possibility that there wasn't the same confidence in the defense last year to get a stop, and it maybe affected the way they played on offense? You know, adding Josh Palmer, a guy who separates, adding Elijah Moore, a little bit of speed. They think that maybe they might have a bit of an offensive change in their approach to the game plan now, where they may let Josh take a few more risks, maybe push the ball downfield, and they have the confidence that they can get the stop when they need it. So if it doesn't work out, they've got the ball back instead of, you know, 4 or 5 yard passes, screen passes on their last drive of the year. Maybe they actually go out and try and win something.
Right. Thanks, Brian. Yeah, I think sometimes complementary football as a phrase gets thrown out there, and we think about it as run and pass. And McDermott means it from a standpoint of how the offense and the defense mesh together and playing all three phases. And he's never happier. Well, I shouldn't like put this on him, but when watching post-game speeches, mm-hmm. when all three phases have made a play, isn't the head coach
that's
when a coach is the happiest, because mm-hmm. he gets to celebrate every player. Like, we did it together. That's complementary football. Love that. So that might be right, that what they've done will change the way they play offensively as well. You know, it's funny, like yesterday I saw a stat that the Eagles and the Chiefs versus the Bills and the Chiefs, the Eagles got as many stops of the Chiefs in the Super Bowl as the Bills have in the last four playoff games, which says a lot. And one of the things that has come out of this, and you and I will have to just deal with this for the next, I don't know, eternity, someone took that graphic and tagged you and I and said, but you guys hate the defensive draft. Like, Bean has, whatever, made headlines. He's also convinced a lot of people that we hated the draft, which I guess is fine. You don't have to care what we think about the draft. But as soon as that game ended against the Chiefs, my feeling was, I can't believe they can never stop this guy.
No matter how good their offense is.
Right, their offense is not even good, and you still can't stop him. I mean, it led to questions about McDermott for me, and the offseason being about Garrett and Crosby mm-hmm. and Hendrickson. And I want to play you something. Maybe we'll do this at 7 because I want to get enough time to flesh it out. Matt Bove caught up with Sean McDermott and asked him about the draft. And McDermott's answer was good. And, you know, do we read between the lines too much on things? Possibly. But McDermott's answer, I think, was very interesting because he is, I don't want to go too far on this, he's just kind of living with Brandon Bean, and they're trying to do this thing together. And what he said about all of their defensive draft picks, the way he said it to me was indicative of the blame game down there. Like, who did this? Why is the defense bad?
Why is the defense bad?
Why is the defense the problem?
The first time they've really had a bad unit, by the way.
Yeah.
If I can just put special teams aside for a second. It's the first time they had a arguably bad unit in how long? When's the last time they had a bad unit?
Yeah.
Was it the 2018 Bills offense? Like, it's been years.
It's been a while. Special teams had a couple bad years.
That's why I like it, putting them aside.
Sure, sure. All right, 803-0550. We'll play that McDermott clip top of the hour. Matt Bove asking McDermott about the defense. And it does lead to the question, like, why was it bad? Let's ask about that. Let's discuss it. 803-0550. Why did it need so much correction? Jeremy and Joe on WGR.